welcome to Killer Cross Space. This is episode 45. This case is going to be about Andy Puglisi, but I'll just call him Andy in this episode. And on August 21st, 1976, in Lawrence, Massachusetts, some young kids named Melanie and Andy would meet at the local pool called Higgins Memorial Swimming Pool late in the morning that day. They would spend most of the day there like usual until Melanie would become hungry around 4:30 p.m., and she would decide to go home, which was about 200 yards or so to her mother's apartment. And she would state later on that something about that day just wasn't right, and it just made her feel afraid. But Andy would not walk her home because he was, you know, hanging out with friends and didn't want to leave the pool. But her 11-year-old brother Jeff would end up taking her. This would be the last time Melanie would see Andy alive, and he would be sitting by the pool, like I said, talking to some friends. You'll learn more about Melanie later on in this episode, but details of Andy: he was 10 years old and the oldest out of five children. He had a slim build, brown eyes, brown hair, and he was wearing green swimming trunks. His mother would tell investigators that he had called home about 3:30-ish and talked to one of his brothers. He gave no indication anything was wrong at this time, which he would have still been with Melanie, I believe, you know, because if she left at 4:30. A lifeguard talked to him around 5, and a clerk at a pool would see him walking around the edge of the pool area, and he was, you know, in his trunks and shoes then. His mother would start wandering around the area looking for him at about 6 p.m. By 11 p.m., she'd report that Andy was missing to the police. And a massive search would follow. They would have dogs sniff at abandoned locations, the woods near the pool. They'd also bring in divers to check the river. Nothing would be found of Andy after 6 days of searching. It's crazy to think he disappeared at a public pool that on average had, you know, probably 200-300 kids. Because where Andy and Melanie live was a housing project, like, so that was really close to that area. Like I said, you're looking at 100 yards, 200 yards, bam, housing apartment. But like I said, he only lived about 100 yards from the pool. But at first, investigators felt he was a runaway because he did live in a broken home, and they felt he might have felt torn between his parents. And foul play would be suspected in his disappearance. His mother, his father, and his mother's boyfriend were all suspect at first, and the police felt the mother or her father done it in revenge against one another. Well, her boyfriend was suspected because Andy's mother had just kicked him out, so the police wondered if he done it to get back at her. Most of the police would eventually put them on the bottom of the suspect list, though. His dental records, from what I read, would be sent to Chicago to be checked to see if he was one of the children who was found buried underneath the home of serial killer John Wayne Gacy. There was no match made. And in 1982, this is 6 years after, the police would reopen the investigation into Andy's disappearance by bringing a psychic named Andrew Barnhart, a patrolman by the name of Mike Carrell. I'm pretty sure I probably pronounced that wrong, but Mike would go to a presentation at Texas A&M, and Andrew would be one of the speakers there. And while Mike was listening to Andrew, he liked what he heard, so he decided he would talk to Andrew after the presentation was over. But he would tell him that they have a missing persons case back home, and does he see anything? And Andrew would reply that the boy's dead, and the body was still there. Mike said he never told the age or gender at the time of this incident, and Andrew would go on to say the body was buried in a place that was sometimes wet, sometimes not. And this would impress Mike even more, and once he returned home, he would get permission to talk more with Andrew. Conversations with Andrew would get more interesting because he would describe the gravesite as the body was 3 feet down with 3 feet of dirt on top. He also mentioned there were two white towers nearby. Andrew would go on to say a middle-aged man with salt-and-pepper hair and had screwed-up front teeth had walked over the grave. And I'm assuming he had a limp as well. And the grave was covered with brush and sticks. And the location would have something to do with the M19, M20, M21, and M23. I'm not totally sure what that refers to. But something with the layout. But Mike would go back to this area and check it. And it was a dump site just downhill from the pool. To his surprise, there was a soccer field being built over it, and there were two white goalposts there at one end. Could that be the white towers he was talking about? And the numbers of the dump were M20, M21, and M23. So that even made it more interesting. But Andrew felt Andy had not been murdered on purpose as well. He said something had happened to the boy while he was being raped. And something had been stuffed in his mouth, like, to keep him quiet, and he possibly choked. He could have possibly had, like, seizure. And Mike would later learn that Andy was epileptic. Andrew would describe the man with a mustache, like, so slight build, dirty hair, and a gimpy left leg, like I just said a little bit earlier. And according to the captain of the police force, only investigators knew this at the time, but one of the suspects I mentioned a little bit later on fits this description. And Mike would eventually have to raise money up to bring Andrew and his wife to Lawrence, Massachusetts. And the police decided to dig in this area brought up by Andrew. But by the time everything was ready to go, a lot of family members, friends, and other locals showed up. This would bother Andrew, and he claimed it interfered with his abilities. And Andrew would leave, and the dig didn't happen. And Andrew would come up a little later in the episode, though. But there are two suspects in the disappearance. The first one is Charles Pierce, who lived in Haverhill, Massachusetts in 1976. He had confessed to two abductions that occurred in the 70s. One of them was a girl in 1973, and the one he mentioned was a case involving an unidentified boy from Lawrence, Massachusetts. The belief is he was referring to Andy, and he would claim, though, he sexually assaulted and then buried the boy in a grave near the girl's body. Neither body has been discovered, though. And one thing about Charles, though, he was, you know, familiar with the Lawrence area, and he was a suspect in over a dozen children's disappearances from the 50s through the 70s. And Charles drove a vehicle that resembled what was seen at the pool, island the day Andy disappeared. I've also heard it was another suspect's individuals that drove something similar like that, too, as well. Like, I've read two different things on it. But he would be convicted of a Massachusetts 1969 murder to a 13-year-old girl and was serving a 20-year-old sentence for it until he died in 1999 at the age of 77. But he would claim that he had killed 15 to 20 children. And the crazy thing, the police did not question about Andy's murder at the time. And I'll go into more details with this later on in the episode. And the other suspect would be Wayne Chapman. He was from Providence, Rhode Island, and he might have been associated with Charles. Wayne would be arrested, though, in Waterloo, New York in September 1976 while driving a vehicle that had been converted into a van, and it was originally a blue delivery truck. This is what I was talking about with the vehicle. He had been pulled over, though, for something minor, but the cop would see photos on the dashboard of children. I'm guessing these were pretty, like, graphic pictures and stuff. But once his van was searched, they would find child pornography material, rope, tape, handcuffs, a fake police badge, camera equipment, a starter pistol, a tape of Wayne saying messed up things he would do to boys that were getting off the bus he was following at the time, and a sock which appeared to have a blood stain on it. I've heard of the, I haven't listened to the audio, but I will mention about it a little later on. Like, they say it's pretty messed up. But it says that with the blood stain on the sock, it had been claimed tests were done on the sock, but supposedly the results on the sock have been lost. And from my understanding, Andy's mom said the sock belonged to Andy, because she said something about, if I remember correctly, it was like he got made fun of the socks because how they were or something. To go back on to the suspects, Wayne would later be convicted of a 1975 rape of two boys. The crazy thing is, he lured them from the same pool that Andy disappeared from. So he's, you know, very, very familiar with this pool and has, you know, done a crime here already. He had asked the two boys to help him find a lost poodle. Like I said earlier when talking about Andrew Barnhart's describing the individual, well, Wayne had a slight limp in his left leg. He was also thin at the time in 1976, plus he had a mustache and greasy-looking hair. Now we go into 1983. This is when Andrew Barnhart, the psychic, would come back in the picture. The police wanted him to talk to Wayne, and they were hoping that Wayne would confess to Andrew's disappearance. But they would talk on the phone, but the call bothered Wayne, so it all fell flat after that. And Andrew would leave again while taking some of Andy's belongings with him. I'm assuming this is the time he took them. He might have took them before, but I think this was the time. But he was hoping to gather more information on them while meditating. Mike was hoping the dig would pick back up, but everything was shut down. Andy's phone was closed, and a weird thing happened. Andrew disappeared. Mike tried calling him many times with no luck. He even had Texas police to find him, but they weren't able to locate him either. And Mike was hoping to at least get Andy's items back, you know, to get back to his mother. But I guess later on, Andrew ended up saying that Andy's belongings was lost in a weather-related event. And even though Andrew disappeared, Mike said everything did line up and that it would be the M19. And it turned out to be the place where Wayne had raped the other two boys in the 1975. Yeah, from my understanding, Andrew shows up, like I said, later in the thing. Not sure when, though. Going back to Melanie, that I mentioned earlier, she, you know, the friend of Andy's, she would produce a documentary in 2008 called Have You Seen Andy? And Melanie would set up a P.O. box for people to send in tips. A lot of interesting tips would soon follow. And she would learn of something interesting by two gentlemen who were boys back in the 70s when Andy disappeared. They would tell Melanie that roughly one to two years after Andy had vanished, they were walking through the woods not far from the pool, and they would stumble upon a 4-foot hole that was not too far. You know, it was pretty much off in the wood area from the pool, and it hadn't been there a day or so prior. And they described the hole as it was perfectly rectangular with a flat bottom and sides. They felt like something had been removed from it. And the boys thought of Andy since a lot of locals felt Andy had been buried in those woods. And they would end up seeing a bent bicycle rim in a nearby tree. It would seem like an arrow pointing at the grave, and they would end up freaking out and running out of the area. A couple days later, they'd return to the same location. The hole was gone. They would say they never mentioned it to anybody until Melanie started doing the film. So you're looking at over 20 years later. And another tip that came in was from two writers. They would tell her to check out a neighbor in the area at the time with the name of Gary. I'm not even going to pronounce his name right, but it's T-H-I-B-E-D-E-A-U. But Gary was 19, 20 years old back in 1976, and the unit he lived in that, the housing project next to the pool, it was actually the closest to the pool. And the reason he became a suspect was because there are documents showing complaints of inappropriate behavior towards three local boys, even though it was never proven. But he would deny it when Melanie talked to him in the late 90s. And the police say he did not have any convincing alibi at the time when Andy disappeared. And Gary basically told him, he said he was working from 3 p.m. and on. So if that's true, then he wasn't even home. But Melanie would try to contact Wayne while he was in prison for the two assaults on the boys in 1975 that I mentioned earlier. But he was not talking to her, but then he finally did. He still claims he did not do anything to Andy, and he would admit he was in Lawrence at the time Andy disappeared, but he claims he never saw Andy or even the pool. Melanie would dig into Wayne's life, and I mentioned about his arrest earlier as well in this episode. So that's when she finds out, you know, why he's arrested for, you know, the whole search, and then going back in the 1975. But from my understanding, the audio of him talking about the boys getting off the bus is in her documentary. I have yet to see it, but I've heard it was really good. In the documentary, though, the patrolman Mike that brought Andy Barnhart to Lawrence, Mike would show Melanie the area that Andrew said Andy was buried at. It would reveal the site was only about 70 feet from the pool where the two men she had talked to earlier saw a hole back in the late 70s. So, things are kind of adding up here. Melanie would try to contact Charles through letters. This is the other suspect, but he would not respond. Charles would instead start talking in prison about what he had done. A prison guard would call them to basically come and talk to Charles because he was dying of prostate cancer, so he was telling everything. See, even though she produced the documentary in 2008, she started actually doing the research and talking to people in the 90s. Because remember when Charles, like I said, died in 1999. But basically, like I said, that he was dying of prostate cancer, so he was telling everything before he went. And he would confess to all of this with Andy, but the next day he would take a story back. And the thing is he was naming places that was in Lawrence that was there in the 50s, but not there in the 70s. So they kind of felt like he wasn't telling the truth, at least when it involved Andy's murder. But there are no other Lawrence boys that had disappeared between 1950 through 1980. The one thing that comes from this is he would state he watched kids at the pool and he would claim to know Wayne. Wayne would deny it, though, later, whenever they asked Wayne about it. Andrew Barnhart would eventually be found by the Globe, not sure of what year, but I'm assuming the late 90s, once Melanie's documentary was being made. And he felt Charles and Wayne did work with each other. He claims that that's how Charles knew the pool was a good place to get kids, was through Wayne. Did they work together? Who knows? Very possible. But I read a thing about the two boys that Wayne raped in 1975. The boys would report later that they heard a clicking noise close by. Possibly a clicking noise from a camera. Could this have been Charles taking the pictures? From my understanding, there are reports of Wayne being seen at the pool by six people there. There was a four-year-old boy at the time who said he had seen the abduction of Andy. It was reported in a newspaper in 1982, but it was never investigated by police at the time, which I find crazy. And the boy would say the abductor asked them if they would help him look for his lost dog. Same thing like what happened in 1975, what Wayne did. But Andy the boy would follow the man into the woods, and that's when everything went down. The boy had run away after Andy told him to, and when he looked back, he would see the two men with Andy. Were these two men Wayne and Charles? Not sure. But my theory kind of goes into what happened to Andy. Like I said, he's never been found. They have no clue where he's at. Like I said, he disappeared back in 1976. He could still be alive today. Hardly doubtful, since nothing's ever surfaced from him. But my questions I have on this, like I said, my theory, like, I kind of wonder, like, did the sock really get lost? Like, was it just tossed out for some unknown reason? And because DNA tests now, you know, they'd be able to get DNA pulled from that now. And I'm pretty sure there's probably been police cover-up, you know, mentioned theory, but I don't see that here. But I kind of wonder on Andrew, the psychic's claims. He makes some interesting facts, but by 1982, you know, there were 6 years from 76 to 82 that there's probably a lot of information already gathered out. So he might have been able to hear it through the grapevine. So is that the case there? Is, you know, he just basically reported what he knew from the news. But it does seem like he went into a lot of details of stuff that he might not have known. The hole the two boys seen back then, I often wonder if it was Andy's grave, and once somebody learned the police was going to dig up the area, they decided to move him. But you'd think, though, since they had the dogs looking in the woods, unless they didn't put the body there at the time, which, like, the four-year-old boy, you know, had seen him, the two men, like, what would they do with Andy? Like, because they wouldn't have time to bury him in a hole, because that's, like, too public, you know what I mean? Because if it's saying it's like the woods is not too far from the pool, like I said, I'm not in this area, so I have no clue. But if it's not that far, like, you would think maybe somebody would hear him scream, you know. Unless, like I said, where they did say, you know, they did put something in his mouth. But I don't know, though. You'd think somebody would have seen, if Wayne was seen by six people there, you would just think somebody would see Andy and the other little boy walking off with them. You know what I mean? Like, that just kind of, not, you know, saying, you know, that's what happened, but you just think somebody would have seen, you know, Andy with them, since Andy and, you know, all the kids knew each other in that area. I read that there was photos taken of Andy. I don't know if this is true or not. Like I said, it could be in the documentary. I'm not sure. Like I said, I haven't got to watch it. I've just seen, like, bits and pieces of it. But, yeah, there were supposedly photos taken of Andy and that were given to him prior to him disappearing. And they were given to him by an unknown male. If this is true, then I don't see Wayne giving the photos to Andy. But could it have been Charles, though? You know, that's maybe my kind of thought on that, because, you know, because if Wayne gave him the pictures, and then Wayne, you know, if this is what happened, Wayne gave him pictures, a couple days later, he asked him and the other boy, hey, can you go help me find my lost dog? Andy should have had a red flag get thrown up. But if it was Charles, and Charles was, like, off in the woods waiting for Wayne to bring the boys there, then nothing, you know, he wouldn't know. Because I guess Andy was a very, very nice boy and, you know, would always talk to strangers. So, well, not, like, in a bad way. But, you know, in the 70s, though, you know, that's kind of with the way things were, you know, it was a whole lot safer. Well, it wasn't safer, but people felt it was safer, I guess, at the time. Like I said, if this was true, this could also explain, you know, the two boys that was raped by Wayne in 1975 with the camera. You know, that could be. But what if it wasn't Charles or Wayne at all? What if it was some other predator in the area that was after the children? And another question I have, what if the abductor was somebody who worked at the pool or was from the housing project? You know, that could go back to Gary that I mentioned earlier. Or it could be somebody at the pool, like somebody that might have been a suspect or never even looked at. Like, you know, it's hard to tell. Like, you really don't know in this type of situation. But my opinion, though, it does seem like it all points to Wayne, but since there's no definite proof, you know, him being the individual behind the disappearance of Andy. So, but there's some interesting things, though, on Wayne. He was about ready to get released from prison from one of the articles I read, but I'm thinking, like, he showed himself to a nurse, like, flashed his junk out. So, from my understanding, he kind of hurt his case for a little bit, because he's pretty old now. And hopefully he don't get out, because, you know, even though he's old, I still think he'd be a threat to society. But I thank you all for tuning in, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this case, and, you know, be able to check out the Facebook page, because it's Crawlspace. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, you can join the Facebook group, if you can rate the podcast on wherever you listen to it at, you know, help get it out there, and thank you all for tuning in.